Well, we're so glad you're with us today, and if you're joining us on Facebook Live, a special welcome to you as well. We are in the third part of a series that we have entitled Jesus the Giant Slayer. Now, whether you regulate giants to the area of mythology or whether you believe that there were actual giants that existed at one time in history, or whether you believe that giants are just symbolic, we can at least all agree on one thing. Giants are scary. Giants are scary. Now, if you grew up in church, probably the most famous giant that you're familiar with is a giant by the name of Goliath. Most people know the story of David and Goliath. Some don't realize that this is a real story that actually happened, I believe, in history. It happened in about 1025 BC, 1025 before Christ. It's recorded for us in 1 Samuel 17, written by a guy by the name of Samuel. Samuel was a prophet of God. He was the last judge of Israel before Saul became the king of Israel. And so what he records for us is, I believe, an actual event that actually took place in history. There was one guy who heard this at church, and after hearing the story of David and Goliath, he said, I never realized that that was a true story. He said, I thought it was just an allegory for, you know, the big conglomerate beats the little businessman every time, or the little businessman, you know, can compete against the big conglomerate. I didn't realize that it was something that actually happened. The setting, of course, is a war between two groups of people, Israel and a group of people called the Philistines. And so here's how the text begins in 1 Samuel 17. Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Socah in Judah. They pitched their tent at Ephes-Damin and Azekah. And by the way, I listened on, for those of you who are wondering about the pronunciation, I did listen to those pronounced right, so that's how it's pronounced. Okay, Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah. They drew up for battle lines to meet the Philistines. So basically, this is what was going on. There are two hills. They're on either side of the hill. In between them is this valley of a flat ground that they're getting ready to go down and fight in this valley called Elah. The Philistines occupied one hill, the Israelites another, with the valley between them. A champion. Now this means this is a guy that has a history. A champion. This is a guy who's a winner. A champion. This is a guy who's a mighty fighter. He has multiple victories under his belt. He is a warrior's warrior, and he has a reputation. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out from the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. So in English, that means he was 9 feet, 9 inches tall. That's how big this giant was. 9 feet, 9 inches tall. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. So his armor on his torso was 125 pounds. Now, you know, I don't know about you, but I've, you know, tried to work out in the gym, and 125 pounds is a lot of weight, at least for somebody like me. And can you imagine this guy? He is wearing 125 pounds, and he's still able to fight. That's just the part that's on his torso. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear was like the shaft of a weaver's rod, which means basically it's about 5 foot in length, and it's really unusually thick. This was so that his large hands could grasp it. And its iron point weighed 600 shekels. Now, 600 shekels means the iron, just the point of the spear was 15 pounds. Most spears in that day weighed 1 pound in the point. So you're getting the picture here. This is a big, bad, let me just say dude. I mean, that's who he was. And he has a reputation as a warrior, not only as a warrior, but he has a reputation as a winning warrior. He is a champion fighter. So the idea that we have pictured here so far is this guy was undefeatable. You can't beat a Goliath. Now, isn't it true that the giants that control our lives always seem to be undefeatable? I mean, we tried. We can't beat them. We've given names to them so that, you know, now we say, well, you know, it's just the way I am and there's nothing that I can do about it. I named him. I learned how to live with him. And once a giant defines you, it will defeat you. Once a giant defines you, you will always be defeated. So the giant that we're talking about, actually KP introduced a couple of weeks ago, it's the giant of fear. We might call it anxiety. We might call it worry. We might identify it as fear. You know, we name it our anxiety disorder. I said, it's not my fault. I've been diagnosed. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But all of that is because of this giant of fear. And what we do is we turn this giant of fear into an undefeatable champion when we identify it as a disorder in our lives. That means it's something I can't do anything about. It's just who I am. I accept it, and I've given up. You know, Dr. Archibald Hart, a psychologist, tells us that anxiety disorders, this is interesting, anxiety disorders are the most common emotional struggles today. So this means that if you don't face that giant, you know someone who does. Simple as that. So today, we're not going to give you a magic formula, but what I do hope you'll come to as we go through this message is that you will discover that this giant is not undefeatable. He is not undefeatable. And in short, the answer to fear is not courage. The answer to fear is faith. But if we're honest, you know, a lot of us who struggle with fear, and this has been a personal struggle in my life, so, you know, this is not theoretical. Those of us who struggle with fear, we've taken some time to get where we are. And so you need to know that it's probably going to take some time to get out of it. And again, unless you think that this is something that, you know, I'm just, you know, Pastor, you really don't know. Listen, I struggled with it. When I was 5 years old, I was put in children's hospital in Pittsburgh for anxiety disorder. 5 years of age. That's how I was diagnosed. And I struggled with this giant in my life from 5 until 16. And so this isn't hypothetical for me. This is practical and this is personal. So don't leave here thinking, well, he's giving these unrealistic answers to a condition over which I have no control. The story of David and Goliath. David was a champion. An undefeatable champion. And he taunted Israel's army for 40 days. Every morning he would come out. 40 days. He'd come out and he'd say this, Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? I'm just a man. I might be a big man, but I'm just a man. Am I not a Philistine and you are the servants of Saul? Choose a man. Have him come down and fight me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you'll become subjects and serve us. Then Goliath said, I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man that we might fight together. And basically, what he's saying at that particular point is, you know, I'm defying you. I'm defying your whole military. I'm defying Saul, and I'm defying your God, because back then they thought that gods were local. David caught this when he said, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? So David gets it. He's not just defying us, he's defying the God we serve. And the result of all of this for Israel, it's what was expected. On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. In other words, they were helpless. They were helpless. The dictionary talks about someone being dismayed as someone who has been deprived of courage. They've been deprived of courage, resolution, and initiative through the pressure of sudden fear or anxiety, or great perplexity, great confusion on their part. Now, you need to understand this. Fear is a normal emotion. You can't help being afraid. Fear is a normal emotion. And fear actually is a good emotion because it tells us that we're in danger and we need to do something. So fear itself is not bad. But left unchecked, it can become a terrifying giant that causes us debilitating anxiety. It can taunt us. It can challenge us. And we, you know, we're like Israel. We don't know how to respond. I'm not going down there. You see how big that guy is? I'm not facing that. And the giant of fear can taunt us. But you need to know something. The giant of fear does not have ultimate power. Jesus does. And as scary as it is, fear can obscure our view of God. It can crush our confidence. It can grip us and try to choke the very breath out of us. Isn't that what an anxiety attack is? I mean, we feel like we can't even breathe. Feel like we're having a heart attack. Take your breath away. Steal your confidence. But fear, he's a liar. He's a defeated foe, a fallen giant. Fear died. That giant died, as all giants died, when Jesus walked out of the tomb. And we just need to realize this. And in Jesus' name, whatever your giant is, it must fall in your life. It's already fallen. It's been able to become a reality for you. And the stone that topples fear is the stone of faith. Being bold and courageous is not the opposite of fear. Faith is the opposite of fear. And faith begins by saying, I have confidence that my God is bigger than my giant. Now, that doesn't mean faith is an instant fix. It's probably taken you a long time to get into your valley of despair and face the giant of fear. You've got a pattern. So it's likely going to take you a long time to get out of that valley and to topple that giant. And that giant goes by many different names. It goes by worry, anxiety, fear. But at the root of it all is its real identity. And anxiety disorder and all of that stuff, at the root of it is a fear that has taken root in the soil of our lives. And there are three common roots to this debilitating fear. One is conditioning. Two is concealing. And three is controlling. Conditioning, concealing, and controlling. Conditioning is a result of how we've been raised. This was my issue. I just grew up with this anxiety. I don't know why I grew up with this anxiety, but I grew up with this anxiety. I was the champion warrior from my earliest days. I really was. As a matter of fact, I worried about everything. I didn't even have any nails ever because I just chewed them down to the quick all the time. I was a champion warrior. And if I didn't have something to worry about, I worried about that. So I ended up in Children's Hospital at 5 years of age with stomach problems because of this incessant warrior. It was horrible. It was a debilitating giant in my life. I just kind of grew up with it. Then there's concealing. Concealing is, I mean, you know, there's something in our life we're trying to hide. And when you try to hide something, you are always going to live afraid because you're always going to think it's going to be discovered. It's going to come out. Anytime we conceal something in our life, fear flourishes. So we stuff feelings of shame and embarrassment. Maybe we grew up with the idea of conditioning. We grew up with the idea that we're supposed to be perfect, and we realize we're not perfect, but we don't want anybody to know that. So we try to hide it. And we live with this debilitating fear that someday somebody is going to discover it and they're not going to like us. They're going to have a problem with us. And let me just say, when you conceal stuff, you just open the door for all sorts of psychological problems. You do. Mistakes, imperfections, sins, failures that we have. We're never meant to be pushed under the surface of our lives. You ever try to push a beach ball under the water? What happens? You might be able to keep it there for a while, but it pops up over here and it pops up over there, and it has all kinds of different things, and that's what happens to us psychologically when we try to conceal stuff. We get all these psychological problems. We may not even know why they're there, but we know they're there, and we just keep trying to put it on. You need to deflate the ball. Simple as that. And the way you deflate the ball is stop concealing. Stop concealing. Shed the feelings of impending doom because they were covered at the foot of the cross. You know, I used to argue with Satan all the time when he'd come and tell me that I was a failure, that I was weak, and that I was this and I was that. And I would try to argue with him, and I stopped doing that. You know, I just say, yeah, you're right. That's why I need Jesus. Simple as that. That's why I need Jesus. Now, this last one's a big one, and this one is one that we don't admit having, but probably all of us have to some extent, some of us more than others. Controlling. Some people just want to control everything. Have you ever noticed that? They want to control their lives, and they want to control your life. They want to control their circumstances, and they want to control your circumstances as well. And they want to control the conversation, everything about them. They're just controlling people. And controlling people never realize that they're that way, but it can cause serious problems because what happens is they have this uncontrollable fear. This is where anxiety disorder comes from. They have this uncontrolling fear that they can't control something, and that is what results in this debilitating fear. So, it's an irrational fear about things that we have no control over. You know what I'm talking about? What if that doesn't turn out the way I want it to turn out? That's a control problem. What if it doesn't turn out? What if they don't do what they're supposed to do? You can't control them, but you're going to worry about it. And it's going to create all kinds of anxiety and lack of peace in you. What if somebody messes up the plan that I've been working for? What if they do this and I don't get my promotion, or I don't get this, or I don't get that? What if somebody doesn't cooperate with the outcomes that I want? You know, this is what I want, but they're not doing their part. Terrible people. Messing my joy up. By the way, if your joy is found in what other people are doing, you'll never be happy. The question, the real question that we should honestly ask ourselves, if you're a controlling person and you struggle with anxiety disorder because of that, here's the real question you need to be asking yourself. What in your life do I really control? Want me to give you the answer? You're not going to like it. Nothing. Nothing. Did you know that 60% of the things that we worry about are past events? 60% of the things that bug you have already happened. They're gone. They're done. That train has left the station. You can chase it all day. You're not going to change it. So why do we stress over it? 60% already done. Then 25% of the things that we stress over never happen. There was a guy 500 years ago, a guy by the name of Michel de Montaigne, and he said this. I love this quote. You ready for this? This is great. My life has been filled with terrible misfortunes, most of which have never happened. My life has been filled with terrible misfortune, most of which has never happened. And did you know that a study was done, and this is true? The study looked at the ways we imagine calamity in our lives. Calamity that never materialized. The conclusion of the study. So if you're anxious and worried and stressed out over something that, you know, you think, oh, how do I fix this? How do I control this? How do I make this work my way? The conclusion of that study, this is amazing. 97% of the things that we stress over either will never happen, that's 85% will never happen, and 12%, bring it up to 97%, are so minor it won't make any difference anyhow. Truth is, when it comes to this John affair, I wish I could just stop there and say, you know, it's one of these three things. As soon as you identify it, you're done and you're good. That's not the case. Because the truth is most of us struggle with a combination of those things. And here's what I know. If you struggle with conditioning, plus concealing, plus controlling, chances are you're on some kind of medication. I don't mean that in a negative way, okay? You need to thank God that we have medications. He's given them to us. I mean, seriously, He's given them to us to help us cut through the fog sometimes that becomes so dense. We just can't see clearly, and we need help. The medicines are a gift of God. Listen, I have Graves' disease. Okay? And I take medicine for it. Now, there was a day and age when there was no medicine for Graves' disease. And you know what would have happened? I'd have died. Simple as that. So I take Graves' disease, and you know what that means? That means I'm deficient, doesn't it? No. It means something in me is broken, and God has given us tools to fix it. Same thing is true with anxiety and depression, and all kinds of other giants that we face. I think so many people helplessly struggle because they're too proud to admit they have a need. What will people think if they think that I'm on this medicine? Listen, God has given us the gift of medications. Use them thankfully. Don't let them define you. Use them thankfully, but don't let them define you. Your giant has fallen. Medication may simply be the lens that you need to see a little bit clearer in your life. You know, after the death of my parents, the doctor kept telling me that I was depressed. And I kept saying, no, I'm not. doctor kept saying, yes, you are. You need to take medication. And you know what I said? No. You know why? Here's the fear. You ready for this? Here's the fear. Who is going to trust a pastor who needs medication to control his own emotions? I wouldn't. I wouldn't trust me. So there's no, I don't need it. I'm good. God got this. And the doctor said, no, he doesn't. There's a problem here. You need to address this. For 2 years, he told me I needed to address my depression. For 2 years, I resisted. And then I relented. And you know what I discovered? It was kind of like getting a new pair of glasses. All of a sudden, I could see what my problem was clearly. And when I could see what my problem was clearly, I could deal with it honestly. And when I dealt with it honestly, then I went off the medication. I didn't have to go off the medication. And don't ever go off the medication unless you talk to your doctor first, okay? Don't go there, but go off the medication. It helped me see the underlying causes of my depression and helped me defeat that giant in my life. Cutting those roots allowed me to go on to victory. Do not allow. This is the danger. Sometimes we just become so dependent on something that we never find victory. We just settle with covering the symptom. Don't let that happen. Now, in the story of David and Goliath, the idea of David, of Goliath being a champion means that he had a history of victory. Not only was he a champion, he was a big bad champion. He came from a city called Gath. Now, if you don't know Bible history, you won't realize this, but Gath was a horrible place to grow up in. Gath was a city full of thugs. As a matter of fact, Gath would make the worst place of Atlanta look like country clubs today. I mean, that's what it was. You wanted a bad dude? Just let him grow up in Gath. He's going to grow up fighting. He's going to have to grow up fighting. And this is significant because, you know, Goliath, you know, he'd been around for a while. He would have been in Guinness's Book of Record if it had existed then. He had the most battles won. So giants, you know, they don't just show up. They've been around for a while. Your giant has been around for a while. Didn't just show up. You've been fighting this giant for a long time, and they've taunted you sometimes for days, weeks, months, years, maybe even decades. Perhaps you've heard them. Remember when you made the promise you were going to change? You didn't change. Didn't happen, did it? Remember that time you went to church and that message so moved you that you thought things were going to be different? I mean, you knew they were going to be different, but nothing changed. Still the same, isn't it? Remember that promise you made to God? Remember that? You promised him. You never kept it, did you? You're still promising. You've not done anything about it. You know what those are? Those are the voices of your Goliath. That's what they are. When Goliath stepped before the army of Israel, he was huge. And he had a record. And they made sure that they knew about that record because they were trying to demoralize the army of Israel. And so they stood there and they lined up for battle and they were ready to fight. And then Goliath would come out to fight. And they would run and hide. Back to the tent, boys. Can't fight this guy. Too big, too strong, has a record. So day after day, this righteous army would gather on their hill. And they would pound their swords, because that's what they used to do, building up their courage. Boom, 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 boom. They're ready to fight. Come on. Then Goliath would come up, and it was over. That's what our churches look like many times. We're in the midst of a righteous army, and we lift our war cry week after week, and we sing praise to the God of angel armies. God is so good, something beautiful, whatever we want. We raise our hands and we just have a grand time, and then the enemy steps forward and taunts us, and we run and flee in our tents. And the only battles most of us face are inside these walls. Because as soon as we get out there, the enemy is there, and he's taunting us, and we run and hide in our tent until we come back next week. And then we talk about how wonderful our God is. See, most of us live a schizophrenic faith. On one part, we really believe that Jesus is bigger and he's able. We really believe that. But on the other hand, the giant is before us. And we cave in. Because end times, nobody can do anything. Too big, too strong, too powerful. And the solution to this is not more determination on your part. It's not. The solution is faith. When we see God and we hear God through His Word, and that's what this book is, when we see and hear God through this, we begin to realize that Jesus is bigger than our giants. And for me, the way that works out is when I'm at my lowest point and I'm discouraged, I make a beeline for the cross. Because a God who loved me enough to send His Son for me, He's not going to mess me up now. And I just realize that. He loved me so much that He did that. Is He going to really let anything that's going to ultimately harm me in my life? So what is the faith that leads to victory? Well, first of all, the faith that leads to victory reminds me that God is able. No matter what happens, God is able to control it. He's got it. And He'll make sure that it's brought to fruition. Whatever circumstance you're facing, just remember this: God is able. What's the faith that leads to victory? The faith that leads to victory is a faith that always keeps Jesus front and center in my life. And again, for me, it's making that beeline for the cross. And now, that may sound counterintuitive to you, because if you think about it for a minute, the cross didn't look like a great victory with being won. As a matter of fact, just the opposite. If you had been at the foot of the cross and watched Jesus die, you would have been just like His disciples. You thought, we bought back the wrong guy. It's over. It's done. Wasted 3 years of my life. He's dead. But because of the cross, Jesus walked out of the grave and was exalted to the highest position. Make sure you understand this. In all of the universes, now scientists tell us that there are 300 million different universes. Jesus is over all of them. Don't you think that He who made all of that can take care of you? He's got it. Stop looking at the problem and start looking at the problem solver. He controls everything. Oh, that everything includes that situation that you think is out of control. Oh, and by the way, you know why it's out of control? Because it is out of your control. You never had control of it in the first place. Stop worrying about it. The verse that I go to whenever I am in my deepest time of despair is Romans 8:32. He who did not spare his own son but gave him up for us all, how will he not also along with him graciously give us all things? Keep Jesus front and center in your life and your giant will fall. Your giant has fallen. You just don't recognize it yet. Never, never, ever take your eyes off of Jesus. And then thirdly, okay, you say, okay, Pastor, as far as I know, I'm doing that, but it's just not working. Well, here's the third thing you need to do. Name what's keeping you up at night. Name what's keeping you up at night. Once you can honestly and specifically identify what the giant is and admit our unrest and security is tied to a person, to what they're doing or not doing, it's tied to a circumstance, what's happening and what's not happening, then you can take those cares and load them off, hand them off to an all-sufficient God. We talked about this a few weeks ago. An all-sufficient God. And it's not enough to say, you know, the problem is we are so general. It drives me nuts. You know, I just want you to pray about this for me, Pastor. I'm not going to tell you what it is, just you need to pray for me. Let me just say, if you won't tell me what your problem that you want me to pray for, don't ask me to pray. I'm not being mean. I'm just saying, if you can't trust me with it, why would you want me to pray for it? We need to be specific. Because until you destroy the root, you will always get the fruit. Simple as that. Until you destroy, until you identify the root, you will always get the fruit. To get free, to really get free, you have to destroy the root. And to destroy the root, you have to be specific about the thing that is keeping you up at night. The fears. And I'm not asking you to deny your problem. All I'm asking you to do is relocate your problem. Don't deny it. Just relocate them into the hands of the only one who can really control them. Who is able. This past week I had a problem that was really tormenting me. It was bad. It kept me up at night. Myra will tell you. She says, when I go to bed, I put my head on the pillow and I'm out. So if that doesn't happen, something's wrong. And this problem had me going, and I was up till 2 a.m., and I was going back and forth, and I'm trying to pray about it, and I'm trying to think about it, and I'm trying to work on it, and I'm trying to chew on it, and I'm trying to think, what do I do next? What do I do? How do I hit? What? And I'm not getting anywhere. And finally, I just said, God, here's the problem. And I named it. And I said, here's what I've always said. And I've named that, and I've said, and you know, the problem is I'm saying it, but apparently I don't believe it, because here I am worried over it. So here's the problem. It's in your hands. I believe what you say, and I give it to you. And at that point, I rolled over and went to sleep, slept like a baby. Doesn't mean I cried all night. It means I slept peacefully, okay? Just so that you know. Finally, we need to learn how to fill our hearts with praise. We need to learn how to fill our hearts with pride. If the antidote for fear is faith, the soundtrack of faith is worship. Read the Psalms. David and the boys who wrote the Psalms are experts at this. What do? They have a problem. They lay it out. They name it. Lay it out before God, and then they start praising. God, we know you got it. One of my favorite psalms. This is not name it, claim it, okay? Just understand that. It's just reality. One of my favorite psalms is Psalm 73. Psalm 73 was written by the worship leader in the tabernacle. They didn't even have a building yet. They were still in a tent. And the guy's name is Asaph. And Asaph's job was to lead God's people in worship, to lead them in the song services, to lead them in praise to the Holy One of Israel. And Asaph is on his way to work to do that. And he's looking around. And he's upset. Because he said, God, this just isn't fair. Look at this. People who are trying to do right, they're trying to get this right. They just get beat down every time. Every time they turn around, something's happening. They're getting beat down, and you're not doing anything about that. And the people who are doing the beat down, the bad people who are doing the bad thing, and they won't do what they're supposed to do, and they're just being blessed. They got everything they want. They're healthy. They're wealthy. They got all of this benefit going on with them. Not fair. And he's mad. As a matter of fact, he's so mad, you know what he says? He conceals. Because he says this. He says, you know, God, if I said this when I got up to lead worship, they'd close down the tabernacle. We'd tie the doors of the tent. No one would worship you ever again. That's what's in my heart. And I can't say it because if I say it, it would discourage all of your people. Because I'm supposed to be the leader. You know how he solves it? He goes into worship. And when he gets into worship, he says, now I understand. He said, they're on a slippery slope. They may be getting away with it now, but there's coming a day. When it's going right, just think about this for a minute. You know, we get so upset with people who are doing evil in the world and they're getting away with stuff and we're so mad about it. Let me put this in perspective for you. Why would you deny them a few years of pleasure when unless they come to Jesus, they're going to have an eternity of punishment? And why would you worry about your few years of pain? If you know Jesus, when you see him, you're going to have an eternity of blessing. Put it in perspective. Worship does that. He goes in, as a matter of fact, I love the last part of the thing that I love on that Psalm 73. Read that psalm. He says, whom have I in heaven but you, and earth has nothing I desire besides you. And all of a sudden it comes into perspective for him. The antidote for fear is faith. The soundtrack for faith is worship. And it's only when we can do that, because we were made for worship. Only when we do that does our eyesight clear and our giants fall. Now please understand this, worship is not something that you do on Sunday. It is a response of your life. We have the ability where we look and to whom we look when we're in the middle of our battles. And I've learned personally that when my battles are so heavy, you know what I do? I get away and I just listen to good worship music. Because it clears the heart and raises the spirit. And instead of cowering in my tent, woe is me, the giant is too big, it puts things in perspective. So as we close this morning, we're going to close a little bit different. I'm not asking Joey and Myra to come again. We're going to look at the video that we started with. Remind ourselves that fear, the giant of fear, not only has fallen, but if it's still speaking, it's a liar. And if you want to respond, you can. You know, there's nothing magical in coming forward, but some people, they like to do that. And if you want to come and pray to this side, you can come and pray, deal with that giant. If you want someone to come and help carry that giant with you, you come to this side. Or if you don't know Jesus as your Savior, I want you to come to this side because we want you to start there and we want to help you get started there because it's not, just I come forward and that's it. It's the beginning of a new life, the beginning of a new journey. That's why our motto here is leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. It's a daily walk. So you come to this side, well, someone will pray with you, and then we'll give you some literature to help you with that walk. More importantly, just kind of sit where you are, meditate, and think on the truth of the song that we're about to hear again.
you're not good enough, when he told you you're not right, when he told you you're not strong enough to put up a good fight, when he told you you're not worthy, when he told you you're not loved, when he told you you're not beautiful, you'll never be enough.
Week we're going to look at the giant of rejection. So hope you'll be here for that as we work further on this series of Jesus, the giant slayer. A couple of things for you very quickly. Tonight we begin our summer extravaganza. If you are a volunteer, there's a dinner here for you at 5 o'clock. So you can come and be a part of that dinner, and then the program starts at 6, goes to 8:30 for children. I think, let's see what ages they are again, K4 through what, fifth grade, K-4 through fifth grade, power up. So if you know some kids that need to be here, invite them. We hope that that you'll be here for that. That goes from today until Wednesday, and because it goes through Wednesday, there's no prayer meeting Wednesday, and there's no regular Bible study Wednesday, because we'll be in the summer extravaganza, formerly called BBS, okay, which, by the way, is what all of the decoration is behind us as well. If there's any way we can serve you, any way we can help you, we're here to do that. Normally, we mentioned that there's a kiosk out to the right if you wanted to give. You give a credit card, a debit card. It is not working, so that is not there today. So just to be aware. Okay. Yeah, sorry that's down today. I know a lot of people like to give that way, but it's we lost the password, and we can't seem to get on it. So we'll have it fixed by next week. All right, but you can give with the donate button. Anyway, we can serve you. We're here. Make sure you stop by. We've got a coffee in the coffee room up the hall here, immediately to the right. And so we have that. Then start tonight. If you're with us, volunteers, 5 o'clock. If you want dinner, program starts at 6. Let me pray for us, and we'll be dismissed. Father, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your goodness. Thank you for your grace. Thank you that we don't have to live in the shadow of fear anymore. That giant was defeated at the cross. Already fallen. Lord, help us to appropriate the victory. Not that we win, but that you have won. And we'll be careful to give you the praise for it. In Jesus' name, amen.